All right. Good morning, everybody. I hope you're ready for this Wednesday edition of the Gareth Cliff Show live on The Real Network. I'm joined by the excellent and very powerful Jack Mutlante.
Good morning.
I hope you saw the picture that we put up on the...
Jesus.
The screensaver before we started the show of Jack wearing the dark glasses. Can you show that quickly?
And the necklace.
Yeah, Yes.
Oi.
I mean, if you met that guy at a taxi rank, you'd know he was the boss.
Yeah.
Right? You met that guy. And by the way, if you bumped into that guy anywhere on the street, he'd ask for your phone.
Yeah.
Your
Give
wallet.
Me everything.
Give
Take
me
it off.
I've got a gun. Don't mess with me.
Is there a size 7 shoe I see there on your foot? Take that off too.
Why you never give me?
Oh my God.
That's a great photo.
Listen, I sent James
so many
options. You
should put that in
options.
Your ID because that's
Hell
a good.
Hell no.
Yes.
I gave James so many options and that's the one he chose. Like, I mean,
oh, I love
seriously?
It.
Seriously? But anyway.
All right, everybody. Good morning. Let's get cracking. We have a lot to do today. I'm very excited because we're going to have an actual professor in the studio. I love Professor David Block. We haven't had him here for ages. And he says he has unbelievable, these are his words, unbelievable things to tell us about the universe.
That's amazing.
This morning. He says those auroras that we saw just a couple of days ago, he said they are unprecedented.
Uh-huh.
So, Prof Block is really firing on all cylinders. He's ready to go this morning.
Love, love, love it.
Join him. And then we will have Jonathan Anser, who's written a book.
I love about the title of it.
Yeah, the 50 lies that made South Africa. He's called it bullshit, which I love.
Love.
So we're going to talk to him a little bit later on. And we want you in the comments section, if you aren't already. I see Shani was up very early this morning. Mm. Good morning. At 5:56. Joe, we hadn't even started the show yet, and she's ready.
Yeah.
All right. MN's first time watching live. Yay. Well, you know what? The nice thing about watching live is you get to hurl insults at us. You get in the comment section. You get to praise. You get to add your voice. Your opinion gets heard. If you're not live in the comment section, you get to listen to the podcast. And obviously, you get to judge everybody.
Yeah.
Which is really all anybody wants. But but you don't get absolute control like you do when you listen live. Okay, so we got a lot to do this morning. There's a lot to talk about. And I thought the best place to start is probably... Okay, so I found this, which I thought would be quite interesting for us to look at. This is the Minister of Health. And everybody's been passing this around, so if you've already seen it on social media, I'm sorry. But I wanted to hear Jack's comments on this, and I thought you might want to share your comments on this. This is the Minister of Health explaining how great NHI is going to be when they never, but eventually get it implemented. So once the government has scooped the most they can out of it and put it into their own pockets, this is, of course, if the ANC get their 50 plus one, which they probably will. I know everybody's very excited about the fact that they won't, but they probably will. Anyway... Because we're a country that likes being abused. We're a country that we've got a masochistic tendency. Where
yes, we do.
This is why so many people, they don't understand. People who've grown up in a household where there isn't abuse, they don't understand how people who are in an abusive household keep staying there. They stay there. They're like, why are you allowing yourself to be beaten every day by your horrible husband? Well, this is why. Because the husband says to you, oh, I'm sorry. Yesterday was a mistake. I'll never do that again. And then they carry on abusing you.
Yep.
That's exactly what happens with the ANC. Anyway, they're going to take the NHI. They're going to take whatever money they can. But the minister has assured us, and here he is in a most eloquent speech explaining what the NHI is going to mean to average South Africans. Here we are.
They can be able to go to and then it has facilities if you fall in a particular area, for starters, you have a portable system with your ID. And we are also, just to mention, among some of the things that we also want, we are already quite advanced in terms of including a fingerprint and a biometric system through which
What do you think of that one? I mean, very difficult. If you didn't have any sound, if you didn't hear that properly, it makes no difference because it didn't make any sense. What?
These people are supposed to be in charge. Like, what's going on? I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. So
yeah.
I'm supposed to trust that man.
Yeah. That's Joe Patla, who's the Minister of Health.
Right.
Oh.
I'm supposed to trust that guy with my medical needs.
When you're sick, he's going to pitch up with a biometric system and check your fingerprints and then give you an operation.
Hey, man. Like, good people.
Okay, but you know what? There are people who just really do believe that this NHI is a great thing. I see lots of them. If you go into the stupid retardistan world of Twitter, you will see exactly what I mean. There's people like, yeah, finally, free healthcare for me. Yes, he's struggling not to say we are looking forward to stealing this money. Ha, 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 ha. Well, you know, that's where I appreciate Jacob Zuma, because he was very honest about his intentions.
Yeah.
You could see he was like, I'm not into this governing thing, this making shit work thing. I'm going to take as much as I can. And at least he was honest about it. You know?
Yeah. And
I like that. I appreciated that. By the way, got a comment here from somebody about the picture behind me. MN says, I can hurl insults. Awesome. We all love Mandela, but the poster behind you looks like you're campaigning for the ANC. Now, actually, I've got an original painting at home that's exactly like this. That's the inspiration for this one. It might even be by the same artist, but they found this version online. But I've got that picture at home, and I don't have it at home because I support the ANC. I have it at home because, you know, like a lot of Americans, I have a picture of George Washington in their homes.
Some of them have Ronald Reagan in there.
Sure, Ronnie. Well, yeah, you know. Well. Nothing wrong
and
with
truth
that.
Be told, of all the leaders that we've had in this country, I think Mandela is like upper echelon. Like he's in fact,
no, he was the best.
He's like the best of the best of the best.
I mean, that's why we still make a fuss and celebrate, and you know.
Yeah. I mean, he ushered us into what was supposed to be the most beautiful era in this country.
We don't have to defend him here.
No, we don't.
History is already writing the story, and he will not be a footnote like so many of the presidents.
Unfortunately, his little minions that are left are going to continuously pillage.
Oh my God.
And hey, plunder all of our finances. Like, it's terrible.
You realize this time next week we'll be going to vote.
Yeah.
We won't be doing a show on Wednesday next week because it's a pubic holiday. And I know a lot of you will not be bothering to wake up because a lot of you couldn't even be bothered to register. So you're going to have the day off on Wednesday. It's a reward for people who are extra lazy.
Just ungrateful little...
Yeah.
I don't know what. I can't find the right word this morning, but they are just ungrateful little something.
But we'll be going to vote. I was at an event on Monday morning at a company, and the CEO said, you're all going to vote next Wednesday, aren't you? It's like, because I'm going to check on Thursday. And I'm like, good. Maybe we should do that.
We should.
Start telling people, if you don't come to work on the Thursday with your thumbprint with the ink, then we're not talking to you.
We really not.
So what we will do is we will do a burning platform special on the Podcast Party SA YouTube channel, which if you don't know how to find this by now, because now you should be settling into the new rhythm. Okay, so let me go through this carefully again. People
just
don't get it.
For those idiots at the back.
Okay, so first things first, this show, this is the live show right now. This show is on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Okay, on the Real Network, where you are now. Mm-hmm. So if you found this, shop. Then we've got the Burning Platform, which you'll find on the Podcast Party SA, different channel. And the reason for that is that they do separate things. Okay, so that's important. Need to know that. And it's on all the apps like Apple and Spotify and all the rest of them. You can look for the Podcast Party account, subscribe there. And Africanalysis, which you've come to know and love with JJ Cornish, will also be under the Podcast Party now. All you need to know is at podcastparty.co.za. And here's the guy who's running that. So
it's really simple. It's not that hard, guys. And
right.
We've been putting together a lot of panel discussions. For those of you that have subscribed to Podcast Party, you know exactly what I'm
talking
about.
And Jack has his own show there.
Yes, sir. So it's called The Jack, Metal Child Talks.
Yeah, if you like Jack, there's a whole lot more of him. So you know what? We're giving you a smorgasbord of options here this morning.
Listen,
that's what we're trying to do.
It's a Sunday with a cherry on top, you know what I mean? It's all good. It's delicious. Come here.
Jack, who in the opening picture of the show looks like a squatani.
Listen, subscribe to Podcast Party SA or I will find you. How's about that?
Okay. I'm not settled into this new rhythm, says Gavin. Well, you know what, Gavin, things will change. Yeah. And frankly, with the election next week, we're hoping things will change. Because if things stay the same, it's not such a good thing, frankly. Mm-hmm. Why does Jack look like Snoop Dogg on today's GCS cover photo, says Sanele. Fuck bus.
Man, because I'm still within the energy of the Kendrick Lamar and Drake beef, okay?
Oh, wow.
I'm still within that.
I had someone explain that to me on yesterday. Yesterday was Tuesday. Someone explained the Kendrick and Drake beef, and I still don't understand it. But isn't this all to do with egos?
To a certain extent, yes.
Because as I understand it, someone said there are three great kings of rap at the moment.
Yes, sir.
They are Drake, Kendrick, and
J. Cole.
Mm. And I'm okay with all three of those being on that list.
Yeah.
I have no problem with them. Drake doesn't get involved in a lot of the politics or the social movement.
Not
or
at all.
The cultural stuff that is, you know, that's a little more contentious, let's say. Mm. And Kendrick has a problem with that because Kendrick's like part activist, part rapper.
Mm.
And I don't understand how, so what, he's going to drag Drake into issues, kicking and screaming when Drake doesn't want to be in issues?
Not really. It's like,
you explain it to me.
It's similar to someone using a particular culture to make money off of it, but they don't address the issues that come with that culture.
Oh,
I think
please.
That is like rappers the root
have any,
of it.
Rappers have any room to move on that front?
No, I think of all the people, I think Kendrick Lamar is the one guy that can actually say that. He's last album, which was called Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, mm-hmm. is essentially a therapy session that all of us should have. Whether you've been through traumatic situations or not, there are a lot of gems in that album that would make one look at things in a completely different way. Whereas Drake, for argument's sake, just makes you wave your hands and dance.
Yeah, he just talks about girls and clubs and music and fun.
And popping pills
but
and all of this
but
shit.
We but we need you know, both.
We do.
I don't want to be proselytized to or put into therapy while I listen to it.
Reverse. What was that word?
Proselytized.
Okay.
That's what people used to do. The missionaries used to go out and proselytize to people.
Okay.
So when they went and converted like some very happy tribe of African villagers who wanted nothing to do with it, they like forced Jesus down their throats. That's proselytizing.
Okay.
So what Kendrick is doing here, and I love Kendrick Lamar. I have from the very beginning. I've listened to a lot of, not all, but a lot of his stuff, and I've found it all to be really, really well put together. The guy he's very talented.
He is.
But there's a time and a place for all those things. And I don't need lectures on mental health and society and social ills and the family and politics all the time. It's like sometimes you want bubblegum bullshit.
Yeah, sure.
And Drake fulfills that role and Kendrick fulfills the other role. So, both of you just carry on.
For me, it comes down to time and place. There's a time and place for Kendrick's music and there's a time and place for Drake's music. I think, as you mentioned right at the beginning of this, it comes down to ego. And what we can tell is that Kendrick's ego is a lot more talented than Drake's because they both put out four songs each in the space of about 2 weeks. And the general consensus is that Kendrick Lamar won. Well, and I'm also of the same opinion.
I'm happy about that. I didn't have a dog in the fight, but yeah. I'm glad that, you know, that the beef's now over.
Yeah, no, it is.
So we can all move on. Because God knows that was stopping me from working, you know. Yeah. I didn't do 8 hours of online meetings yesterday because I just couldn't concentrate with the beef still going on.
Yeah, I was actually surprised at how involved a lot of people were. Like at some point, on YouTube, like every single video that popped up, outside of the things that we usually do, everything was a breakdown of Euphoria, breakdown of Family Matters, you know, breakdown of this.
I love the comment section on this show. JP says, luckily Gareth didn't make understanding this beef seem too white. Hashtag proselytize. Tell me, JP, honestly, did you have to look up the word proselytize? Tell the truth.
Be honest. Come on. I legit.
Did you have to look up how to spell it?
Yeah, I asked Gareth. Like the moment he said it, I was like, whoa. This is next level English. I don't understand that.
All right. Well, if you have a suggestion, by the way, let's actually put this to the audience. You notice there's a little bit of space there above the TV, which says The Real Network. What should we put on that shelf? Anything you can imagine. We'll put a shelf above the TV there so that we can fill that space in because it's irritating me. What do we put in there? You can choose. It's got to be long and thin. So anything, we could put a giant penis in there if you want to, because I know our audience are sick in the head.
Yeah.
We could put a snake. We could put a lizard, my favorite animal.
That's interesting.
No, it's not my favorite animal.
Oh, wow.
It's the one animal I really don't like. if you got a suggestion, no, I'm serious. Like people want to have a contribution to make on the show. Forevermore, whatever lives on that shelf will be whatever you suggest, and we'll choose a winner.
We are.
All right, so yeah, really.
And go nuts. Like, you're limited legitimately by your imagination.
Poor Yaku and Marvin and James and the team, they're going to have to put something else in there, but I think it would be fun.
No, but they live for this stuff, don't you, James?
Yeah, James loves that.
Yeah, he loves
James is, yeah.
Loves.
Okay, so a running counter of how much has been stolen through the new NHI. That's that would be funny.
I'd have to animate
that very quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, let us know if you've got an idea of what should go up there. We'd be happy to put something in there that the audience has considered. All right, so a couple of things that you wanted to talk about this morning, because I know you've got an agenda, and we've got Prof Block coming in, we've got some other things. You wanted to talk about the solution to crime. Have you got a solution to crime in South Africa?
Honestly?
Really?
It's no, I don't. I've got a couple of ideas, okay? So, Bafana Modise.
Yes.
Who does Manifesto Unpacked at the podcast party. He had an interview yesterday with a representative from the UDM.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy kind of echoed some of Gayton McKenzie's sentiments. So longer sentences for crime.
Right.
But the one thing that he put across that I actually agreed with was a death sentence.
Okay, so this is such a complicated issue, and I've discussed this. I remember I was in law school when State versus Makwanyane was all the rage.
Yeah.
That was the case that the Constitutional Court heard where they decided to abolish the death penalty. And they found on constitutional grounds that we should no longer as a country have the death penalty. This is one of those situations where I think more than 70% of South Africa was in favor of the death penalty, because we really hate criminals in this country, and with good reason. We've been terrorized by these motherfuckers for how long? Right? So South Africa, you ask the average South African, we do a poll, you're going to find that most South Africans are very much for the death penalty. They want to see criminals being executed. It's also a little bit of bloodlust. There is a part of crime and punishment that is about retribution.
Mm.
That has less to do with rehabilitation and therapy and trying to fix people. Some people you can't fix. Someone who rapes children, you can't fix that person.
Yeah,
I don't care what you say. Someone who kneecaps people with axes and, you know, who beats their wife to death. Those kind of people, you can't really fix them.
See?
So they probably should be killed. I'm in favor of that. But you know what? I'm not on the Constitutional Court, and this is what all of us have to realize, is that the Constitutional Court is there to interpret the law. The law is the Constitution, which was a foundational document of this country. We as the people may decide that we want to at some point have a plebiscite, a referendum about the death penalty. Until that happens, I don't think we've got any chance of changing the law, because the law is now interpreted, written. The highest court in the land has made its call. And they said, by the way, that the main reason that they don't like the death penalty has to do with human dignity. They said, and there's a part of me that agrees with this, why should the state be allowed to kill people? Because if the state is allowed to kill people, then it can also kill people for the wrong reasons.
But I agree with you on that. I just think if the process is done in such a way that the guilty are more likely to be killed than the innocent.
That's always the case, although there are always going to be a percentage of people.
They are.
Who get, you know, put down, for lack of a better word, wrong. It's an injudicious process that ends them up in the gallows.
And look,
and how are we going to do it? Have you thought about how we would do it, by the way? Because that's always more interesting to me than whether we would do it or not. It's like, what do we
lethal
think?
Lethal injection.
You think lethal injection's the way?
Real quick. I mean, they were handing them out, calling them COVID vaccines. But you know what I mean? We'll just...
Controversial this morning.
Put him there, and then, okay, you know, connect him to some sort of a chair and anesthetize whatever the fuck.
Okay.
And then, you know, let him or her go to sleep. Because I think the one thing that has escalated crime in mm-hmm. this country is how easy it is for people to get away with it.
Yeah. And frankly, I don't think our prisons are nice. I've been in one or two of them because we did shows from there. And they're not pleasant places. I'll give you that. But I don't think anyone going to a prison in South Africa is going to get out and be better.
No.
I think they are absolutely, positively going to get out and be worse.
Yep.
There is no way that anyone goes to a South African prison and goes, yeah, you know, I've learned my lesson. I'm now going to be a good member of society. They get out of there and they're like, right, I've learned all the horrible stuff.
Right.
Now I can implement it on these unsuspecting people.
I lived with horrible people. And as they say, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. If your friends are horrible, you're ultimately going to be a horrible person.
Horrible.
Just
that's,
horrible.
That's very, that hits close to the bone for many people. I got horrible friends. MN says, in the US states where they have the death penalty, crime is still high. Does nothing to reduce it. Crime is a complex issue. That's true. But I think a lot of South Africans just want to see these people who are absolutely unrehabilitatable, if that's even a word, they want to see them put out.
Yeah,
they want to see them removed from society. That's all.
That's it. That really is it. Because if there's a harsher penalty for doing the wrong thing,
yeah,
then you might stop a couple of would-be criminals from crossing that line.
I really do believe that the one thing that keeps bad people, including politicians, from doing the one thing that could keep them from doing the bad things is if they see their friends paying a price,
yeah,
like an ultimate price.
We whip him in the town square.
Look at how quickly everyone went quiet after Nosiviwe Maphisa-Nqakula was suddenly arrested.
Hey, hey,
like suddenly the ANC was like,
have you ever seen cockroaches when you switch the light on?
that is one hell of a comparison, a metaphor.
Listen.
Okay, so let's just see here quickly, because there's some very good suggestions. James, people are suggesting, huge erection says, above the TV, what about a taxidermied animal of some kind? Like what? Like a, what would fit in there? Like a genet?
Hmm?
Or a civet or some sort of small predator? What kind of animal would we put in?
In fact, a dinosaur might be great up there.
It's too small for a dinosaur.
No.
It's too small.
Just put a...
Pete says it's okay if some fall through the cracks and we end up putting some innocent people to death. He's like, eh.
Yeah, you know, well.
Eh. It's like, for example, a lot of murderers kill perfectly innocent people. That's not ideal. But
not at all.
If we don't do something with the murderers, we're making it even worse.
Exactly.
How about a shambok? That's long and thin. That could live in that shelf. Maybe a shambok. We'll have to see. It could work.
You know, Gareth, when I was growing up, whenever my friends and I would do something very stupid, whenever we'd get a hiding, they'd say, I'm going to say this in Soto, meaning you only listen through flesh. See what I mean?
That's right.
So this
all goes together with the theme of like punishment.
Seriously, some people just don't get the message until they get hit over the head with it. You know? Yeah. Like Kendrick Lamar says, I'll whip your ass and hide the Bible if God's watching. That's the kind of
I'll whoop your ass.
Yep. Hide the Bible if God's watching.
Kala Funavestes and says, gee, a long time ago you had a rant about the lack of accountability on the continent. If you look at the hero worship that dictators receive, it's even more true now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I saw the UN had a moment of silence for the Iranian president who was killed in that helicopter accident. And by the way, yesterday, on Monday, Siv and I were having a conversation about this because it was still breaking news at that point. People were saying, ooh, Israel. Israel has no interest in killing the president of Iran because he's totally replaceable. It changes nothing in Iran. The Ayatollah's in charge.
And it's like a revolving door.
Yeah, it makes no difference.
People.
So all they're going to do now is put the deputy president in where the president was. So nothing changes there. But I cannot believe that the UN Security Council had a moment of silence for this despicable, deplorable, hideous man who was in charge of Iran, supposedly nominally in charge of Iran. This guy was a reprehensible human being. Mm. You know, when Osama bin Laden was killed, the UN made some statement. The Secretary General was like, well, the world is rid of one more horrible person. It's a good thing.
Come on.
Now we're having moments of silence for these guys. It's absolutely appalling.
No, but the world is upside down. You've got people that are part of the LGBTQI plus whatever letters are added, you know.
Don't throw them in with Iran. They'd never make it in Iran. They wouldn't last a day in Iran.
I mean, they're going to pro-Palestine, what's this?
Rallies.
Marches and rallies and whatnot. It's like, okay, do you know what? How about you catch a plane to any one of these countries,
yes,
and try to wave that flag.
I agree.
Updated one is absolutely disgusting, by the way. But anyway, try that nonsense. Go to Iran and try that nonsense. Let's see what happens.
Jeremy says we should put up a no more bullshit sign above the TV. That's a good idea too. Okay, we're getting some good suggestions here.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to talk to an author called Jonathan Anser a little bit later on. This is his book. Speaking of bullshit, no more bullshit. This is called 50 Fibs That Made South Africa. And he's cleverly used like the Chappies, the inside of the Chappies.
Did you know?
You remember that?
Yep.
I loved those things.
I love those things
oh,
too.
Oh, man. I think I got at least a tenth of my general knowledge from the inside of Chappies
papers. Yeah, yeah, yeah. When general knowledge actually
when it was a thing people used to listen to.
Yeah.
Well, it is time to turn our attention to much more important issues. And I'm thrilled that this morning we have with us none other than Professor David Block, who is an astronomer who's devoted over 40 years to encouraging audiences around the world to always look up. And he is our guest this morning. Prof, it's so nice to see you. How are you?
Oh, I'm looking up in awe and wonder. How are you, Gareth?
I'm delighted to see you. Now, Prof, I've been meaning to talk to you for the longest time about these aurorae that we
yes,
all got to see.
Yes, it's quite staggering.
Now, this was even visible in places like Knysna.
Places like Knysna. You know, Gareth.
People in Knysna, I thought they just took drugs. They probably did too. but they must have seen these aurora and thought, wow, what is going on? Finally, the end of the world has come.
Now, you know, there were some newspaper headlines saying that it's the strongest aurora in 500 years.
My goodness.
And I'll explain why. But it is quite incredible. I was in the Arctic in March, and the views of the aurora were just, it is beyond special. I cannot begin to describe. And especially, you know, when it's so strong that it literally almost rains down upon you, the lights.
It's incredible. I mean, Prof, we actually got pictures from people who listened to the show who went with you on your trip to the Arctic.
Yes.
And, I mean, pictures don't do it justice because obviously we don't have 3D, and you can see that happening in the sky in 3D, so it's a whole different thing.
Absolutely.
Why were they the strongest in 500 years? Why does that happen?
So this is very interesting, is that every 11 years, the sun goes through a period of intense activity. It's got a solar maximum and a solar minimum. So the sun continually spews out very high energy particles such as xenon and krypton, forms what we call the solar wind.
Uh-huh.
And so every 11 years you have these ejections of particles reaching an intensity. But what happened here was terribly interesting, is that you had CMEs.
Yeah.
Those are coronal mass ejections. I mean, this is on a grand de la grand scale, where the sun literally, it's like peeling of an onion effect, Gareth, and wow. You've got these huge bubbles of writhing, seething hydrogen gas, you know.
Prof, those must be some of them as big as the Earth.
Oh, much bigger. No, much bigger. These coronal mass ejections, you know that one flame on the sun at solar prominence can be 40 Earth diameters. These are really gargantuan bubbles, if you like. And so what happened was, 2 weeks ago, there were a couple of CMEs, and the sun ejected these coronal mass ejections. And, of course, it takes a little time, but then it follows the magnetic field lines of the Earth, and it strikes the regions towards the North Pole and the South Pole. So normally you would see the aurora only from the domains of where I go in the Arctic. But because you've got a CME, a coronal mass ejection, of such intensity, it starts lighting up the or interacting with the atmosphere far closer to home. And that's why you could see it not only in the Antarctic, but coming right through to, for example, Hans Bay, I'm told,
wow.
or Nysnes. Prof, it is unheard of.
So what you're actually seeing there is our atmosphere protecting us.
Absolutely. You know, if we didn't have that's exactly right. First of all, you've got the magnetosphere, the magnetic shield around the Earth, which protects us. And then you've got the Earth's atmosphere. And what happens is the particles stream into the magnetosphere. They come into the Earth's atmosphere. And then they start colliding with atoms and molecules of oxygen and nitrogen principally. And then that's where the fireworks happens. You know, you look up and sometimes you see red and sometimes you see blue and often green, as you've seen on my pictures. I sent through a whole lot of pictures.
Show some of those pictures of the aurora.
Those are my photos of the aurora.
Where did you take these? In the North Pole?
So I took those in right up in a little set of islands. It was very interesting, Gareth. Your show is so famous that a lot of the people in my group actually said, you know, we're coming because we heard you on the Gareth Cliff show.
We will. Are you going to do another one of those trips?
Yes, no, I'm doing one in February because we have to capitalize on the fact that the sun is so incredibly active.
Absolutely.
You know, otherwise you'd have to interview me in 11 years' time.
So where were you in Norway, in the Lofoten Islands or something?
Exactly right, the Lofoten Islands. And if anybody's interested in coming with me, I don't know if you want to mention my website.
Sure. I think a lot of people want to go.
I'd love to go.
It's just www.davidblock.co.za.
There we go.
And there's a little contact button, and I'll leave it to you to do the rest. Your
brilliant.
Magic.
That is
but,
amazing.
Yeah, from the Lofoten Islands, you're pretty close to the North Pole, and you're just in a sweet spot. First of all, a sweet spot by day. Exquisite Norwegian beauty. But then by night, you know, I've had people over the years, from radiologists to businessmen to gynecologists to lots of medical people, and everyone just says when they do see it, if the skies allow, you know, it's just that wow kind of experience.
Yeah. It's the greatest show you can get.
Yeah. I think so, and it's literally just by looking up. But you know, the reason I do the tours is there are multitudes. There are thousands of aurora tours advertised, but many people do not get to see the aurora. I, as a prof, know where to go. I can't guarantee that you'll see them. If there's cloud, for example, you won't see them.
Sure.
But I think each one of us, you know, Gareth, needs to be instilled with a sense of awe and wonder. We've often discussed this, of looking up in wonder.
Mm-hmm. So, Prof, first of all, Monica says she loves your tie.
Oh, thank you, Monica.
And Gail says your passion is infectious. It very much is. It's one of the reasons we love having you on. So show us some of these pictures, and then the Prof can tell us what they are. Put up the aurora, for starters, because he's already explained that to us, James. You got it there? James messing around. Come on, one second. You think we've got all day? I'm sorry, Prof. These producers are very incompetent. They don't know what. Oh, there we are.
Look at that.
Oh, all right.
Now, so, you took those pictures.
So these are a collection of pictures from different photographers. I've taken some.
Okay.
Not these two. I didn't take these two, but we'll
that's,
be showing
that's
some.
That's incredible.
But for example, stunning. For example, just look at the dancing purple and greens. But it, the intensity is so high of the light that they reflect in the cold Arctic waters. Can you see that? There's a green hue. Imagine the whole landscape lighting up. On the right, you can see that too, a mountain, and then it looks as if the aurora are actually, you know, stemming forth from the mountain.
But, Prof, it looks like if I were a primitive person,
yes.
500, 600, 1,000
yes.
years ago, primitive.
Yes.
But, you know, I were an uneducated peasant in medieval Europe, and
yes.
I saw this. I think I would imagine that was a dragon.
Well, you know, that's very interesting, Gareth.
That green one.
In years gone by, they were regarded as representing the spirits of departed soldiers who had died in certain of the wars, like the Viking Wars
right.
and so on.
Mm.
So they, I mean, you know, when people saw Halley's Comet, I think it was in 1066 at the Battle of Hastings, many people were so petrified of Comet Halley that they actually yeah. thought the end of the world was drawing nigh. And you can imagine seeing sights like that right in the sky, a battleground of departed spirits and many other myths besides that. But I would say, and as you know, I've traveled the globe using some of the world's largest telescopes, but to me, nothing on Terra Firma beats the aurora just in terms of the wow.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. All right, so tell us about, we talk about primitive and silly, stupid people. There were all these Americans who were stupefied by the eclipse that happened there.
Oh, yes.
A short while ago. Now, yes. I mean, I can understand, you know, ancient Mexico where the Aztecs were the medicine men and the astronomers
yes.
there who were quite, they were smart people.
Right.
They knew when the eclipse was coming and then
right.
they would gather the people and tell them they'd behaved badly and that the gods are going to take away the sun.
Right.
And then the sun would disappear and they'd all immediately shit themselves. And then suddenly they'd say, no, the sun's back. And it's because of your offerings and it's because
yes.
of your loyalty to the king
yes.
or whatever else. And it worked like a charm.
Yes.
Columbus
now,
pulled the same trick, didn't he?
Columbus pulled the same trick, I think.
Yes.
But the Americans in the year 2024, I mean, you had a lot of them who were completely dumbfounded by the eclipse.
It was a very emotional moment for me. I was invited to address a group of folk in Texas,
mm-hmm.
in Austin, Texas. And we were battling with a cloud the entire day. But at the time of totality, I suddenly saw the clouds dissipate. And I suddenly saw the moon start kissing the limb of the sun. And it was, I just waited there. Liz and I were watching, my wife and I, and we were just watching.
Uh-huh.
And then what happens is the temperature, of course, drops and it starts appearing as if night is encroaching and the birds start flying home to their nests. And it's quite dramatic, you know. My wife took some pictures of a tree in front of us, and you could see the tree brilliantly. It was broad daylight. But then during the eclipse, you could barely see the tree. It was like as if night had impinged upon us. And I think to people who've never seen a total eclipse of the sun before, it is magnificent for one
yes.
reason. Once you've got totality, it is safe to actually look at our closest star with a naked eye. Before that, you need special glasses.
Yeah. Right.
But at the point of totality, the moments of totality when the moon eclipses the sun, you can actually see solar prominences, flames leaping out from the surface of the sun. You know, you can actually see the corona, the blazing atmosphere of our closest star. It's a very emotional moment. I remember, you of course have heard of Clem Sunter. His wife came on one of my trips to mm-hmm. see an eclipse of the sun, and she said nothing has made her cry like that.
How
because
amazing.
It's just so emotional.
That's beautiful.
Mm.
Prof, I do want you to see this. This is a video that someone, I found this online. Apparently, a young girl in Portugal
yes.
put her phone down while it was recording.
Yes.
To record herself. She was with some friends or whatever. She ended up, perchance, catching a meteor. Yes. As it blazed across the sky in Portugal. It's the most incredible footage. Just take a look at this because this is beautiful. Watch this. Sky lights up. And there it goes.
Wow.
Oh,
just incredible.
Oh, wow. That is just so, so stunning. Was that taken at the time of the eclipse, during the time of the eclipse?
I'm not sure. I think that was at night.
Yes.
And I think it was during...
I see.
Yeah, it was during some... There was obviously some meteor shower that occurred, and she managed to just perchance catch
that. But I think that's one of the beautiful phenomena in the night sky is, of course, we'll be showing some James Webb images in a moment, but just the beauty of the night skies and of the meteor showers.
But that's quite something to catch, right?
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But it's possible. If you have your cell phone handy, they strike the Earth more frequently than you would think. Of course, we've got what's called meteor showers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have multitudes of meteors coming in. Fortunately, very few ever strike the Earth. Those would be called your meteorites. But I think that's quite stunning footage.
It's lovely,
indeed.
Huh? All right, let's look at some of these pictures from the telescope, because the James Webb telescope, I remember when they started sending photographs back, you were very, very excited.
I was.
Now, what have we got going on here?
So now just look at this. I mean, if this doesn't drive you wild, one belongs to working at AVBOB. I mean, just look at this. This is a... embryonic solar system, a solar system in the making. The star at the center would be representative almost of our sun, but this is another star. But we've blackened it out because it's so bright. And then on either side of the star, AU Microscopii, you've got the plane, or a plane of gas and of dust, and a solar system can form within that plane. So you're actually looking at the birth of an embryonic solar system.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. You know, as I say, that is wild stuff. I mean, to see the birth of a solar system actually happening before our veritable eyes here at the Real Network, this is just the stuff dreams are made of. And these are all extremely recent images. When I was invited here today, I said, let me bring the latest images for both of
and
you
Prof,
to enjoy.
What is the scale of this that we're looking at?
So you can have a look at the scale at the bottom. An astronomical unit is around the Earth-Sun distance. So you're looking at...
9.7 AU.
That's correct. So that would be... an AU is 150 million kilometers times 9. So it's really comparable to the size of our solar system. Smaller, but comparable in terms of morphology.
Wow.
Okay, well, that's quite a picture. And the fact that we can get that, I remember when the black hole picture came out.
Yes, wasn't that amazing?
You sent me a message. And I mean, we've never seen.
No.
We only could theorize about that before,
but
right?
But also very interesting, I brought with something called the Pillars of Creation.
Show us the Pillars of Creation.
The Pillars of Creation are absolutely, there we go.
Oh, yes.
This now,
it's a nebula. It's a
nebula, yeah.
Yeah, nebulae. Now, at left, you've got a view through the Hubble Space Telescope, and at right through the James Webb. And you see, what do you see? You see these writhing blue stars shining at temperatures of 50,000 degrees centigrade. You know, you see the ultraviolet radiation impinging upon what? Columns of cosmic dust. Mm-hmm. And you and I, if we had to pinch ourselves, we are made of the stuff cooked inside the interiors of stars. We're made of carbon-based stardust. So they've dubbed this Pillars of Creation. But I think, you know, with, again, your title, The Real Network, this is the real thing through the eyes of the
James Webb. Like it could be the hand of God. You know?
Absolutely. It is just absolutely mind-blowing. But then, of course, there have been the most awesome images of very deep space. I'd like to just show your audience, if I may, the gravitational arcs, where you've got light bending in arcs over a time span.
You've got to be patient with James. He has no idea.
There we go. Now, this is extraordinary, is that light from a distant galaxy is bending as it comes to the Earth it approaches other galaxies and clusters of galaxies, and the light actually bends.
Well, that's the bending of space-time, which Einstein proposed all those years ago. So you can actually see, as it approaches things of great gravity, it bends around.
I think that is stunning. You know, Einstein, as you correctly say, predicted this. It was established and verified at the total eclipse of the sun in 1919. But there's an image which I want to show you with a whole lot of these arcs, if they could bring this up. Oh. It's got a whole lot of these orange.
I wouldn't hold my breath at the producers. They don't know what any of this is.
Arcs.
To them, it's all completely confusing.
Yeah, we're all in class
right
now.
But the point is that you're looking back nearly 13 billion years in time in this image I want to show you with the gravitational arcs. You've got clusters of galaxies, and then you've got all these arcs around.
Well, we're waiting with bated breath for James to see 13.5 billion years into history.
So as you can see,
this guy can hear his brain melting in the production booth.
Maybe James, my son Nathaniel will help him to select the gravitational arcs.
But not a drawing, James, an actual photograph.
That's right. We want an actual image.
You know, people, scientists have spent their life trying to get this telescope up and running. That's not it.
That's not what we're looking for. We're looking at an image where you've got lots of galaxies and then dozens of orange arcs. There we go.
Goodness.
I mean, just look at this. So you're looking back around 13 billion years in time, and all those arcs, the orange arcs that you see, is the deflection of light from a distant galaxy. If you had to take a spectroscope, you'd see that they match. In other words, this is proof of Einstein's theory of general relativity, and as you say, Gareth, of curved space-time on the grandest of scale. But I wanted to notice something. We are able to probe the universe to more than 13 billion years in time with the James Webb. And every single fuzzy patch that you see there is a galaxy.
That's almost to the very origin of the universe.
Well, that's right. The Big Bang is about 13.8.
Yeah.
The microwave, the cosmic microwave background radiation is about from Big Bang to around 300,000 years. So we're literally pushing our observations to the very birthings of our cosmos.
Do you know, in that previous picture, Prof, do you know what that big blue-white star in the middle is?
Let's have a look. Ah, so that would be a foreground star in our Milky Way galaxy, known by some numerical number, not any famous.
It's not one that we would recognize.
No. Here we are literally looking back, as I say, billions of years in terms of the background image, but the foreground image, that would just be a bright star, but not very bright at all, in the Milky Way galaxy. But the reason it looks so bright is because of the sensitivity of the detectors in the James Webb.
I've never asked you this before, but when you go out and look up, as you tell us to do, and you're right to do so.
Yes.
Do you look for a particular constellation? Is there a set of stars that you're most drawn to?
It's a very interesting question. I think different areas of the sky interest me at different times. For example, there's the Rosette Nebula, you know, and that's a stellar maternity ward, gynecological, the birthing of stars. And when I've gone to Chile to use the large telescopes there, I would spend my time, for example, on the Rosette. But then other times, like when I've worked in Hawaii, that's been beautiful. I've observed galaxies that are very close to my heart. So,
and Hawaii would be a good place because there's less light pollution.
So Hawaii is one of the best places on the Earth for large telescopes. And the reason is at Mauna Kea Observatories, when you're driving to the telescope, you drive above the clouds.
Wow.
So you go in your 4x4, and you're around 4,200 meters or something of that order.
Right.
So it's extremely high. You're above the clouds, so the air's crisp and pristine. The only problem, Gareth, is that some of my colleagues do need oxygen at that level.
Of course, old professors.
You know, no. You know, people a quarter my age. Sometimes, yeah, I've had people say to me, "Hey, prof, where do you get all this energy from? I'm exhausted. I can't breathe." And they're 20 years old. So, no. It depends on the excitement of the moment, Gareth.
I always like to look for the Southern Cross because it gives me direction, yes, as in the compass, yes, direction. Mm-hmm. But I mean, my favorite constellation has got to be Orion.
Oh, yes.
And it's easy to find in, yes, almost any night sky, even where there is a lot of pollution.
Absolutely. Very easy to find. Orion is magnificent. You've got just so many famous stars in the constellation of Orion.
Betelgeuse.
You've got Betelgeuse. That's right. Remembered very well.
It's the biggest star we can see with the naked eye, right?
Betelgeuse is just this enormous.
How many times bigger
star
than the sun?
It would be hundreds of times larger than our own sun. It is absolutely gargantuan. You've got Betelgeuse. You've got Messier 42. There's the rosette.
Oh, wow.
That's my picture. That's a three-hour exposure using some of the world's large telescopes in Chile, in the Atacama Desert.
That's beautiful.
And thank you. And, I mean, just look, you're looking through the stars at the Milky Way galaxy, and you're looking at, now, the baby stars have been born inside that central bubble. You see that central bubble?
Right.
And so the baby stars are clearing away the environs of their stellar cocoons. And you can just see writhing, seething, young embryonic stars emerging and clearing their cocoons. That's one of my most famous, perhaps, images, the Rosette Nebula. Now, for that, I would have traveled to the Atacama Desert in Chile and spent probably a week in total securing an image like this.
Is there anywhere on Earth that you still have to go to see what you want to see?
I think that, you know, my eyes, it's a very good, a brilliant question. I've been to Hawaii, I've observed from Hawaii. I've been to Chile, I've observed it. Of course, there are still large telescopes, but I've been privy to use some of the best telescopes on terra firma. And now our attention is turning towards space.
Yes.
So the James Webb Space Telescope is behind the moon. So that's where our attention these days is focused, is not so much on Earth. I mean, the earthly telescopes, those on Earth, give the most phenomenal images.
Sorry, they've just put up a picture of the Carina
Nebula. Oh, yeah, look at
Nebula.
That. Oh, I mean, just look at that. Now, this is an image from the James Webb Space Telescope. This is the Carina Nebula, MGC 3324. Mm. And so what you've got there is, Gareth, you'll remember that many years ago, I was one of the astronomers who cracked the code for cold cosmic dust. And here you've got, you'll remember that, and here you've got cold cosmic dust just seen almost face on. You've got cliffs of this cold cosmic dust. And the relevance for you and me is that Gareth is made of cold, of carbon-based stardust. But again, you can see the clarity of the James Webb. You know, it was only launched on Christmas Day in 2021. Mm. It's now behind the moon. But that's where a lot of my attention today is focused.
There are a few people in the comments, Prof, who were asking about the SALT telescope that we have here.
Yes.
Have you used that one?
So that telescope I have not used. I generally go for infrared telescopes, large infrared telescopes. Many of these are found, for example, Hawaii has got some excellent detection. SALT is really a spectroscopic instrument by and large. So I have not used SALT for my studies. I have used space telescopes for my studies on cold cosmic dust. Our research has been featured on Nature twice. You know, Gareth, I'm still apparently the only scientist on the continent of Africa whose research has twice been featured on the cover of Nature.
Fantastic.
So I'm very excited about
you,
it.
You should be very proud of that. We are. I think it's amazing.
James Webb Telescope, as you said, was launched a couple of years ago.
2021.
How
how has the images it has generated, how much more information have we gathered in comparison to the Hubble?
Yes, no, I think the point there is that with Hubble, we could never go to a distance of a redshift. We could never, I imagine, seeing domains of galaxies almost at the very birth of the Big Bang. That is absolutely phenomenal. The James Webb has taken us orders of magnitude further. Hubble did well, but Hubble, even with the pillars of creation, you could see there was... here, we really... You know, there's something very interesting. The universe starts off in a Big Bang, and then it's flooded with electromagnetic radiation or light. We call this the radiation-dominated epoch. Then eventually the universe starts cooling down and galaxies start forming. It's those galaxies, only around 300 million years old, which is nothing on the scale of 14 billion years. Nothing. I mean, 300 million years to see galaxies in the making, to see protoplanetary systems in the making like AU Microscopia. We are able to literally hold on to the cosmos right almost at its very beginning when stars and galaxies started forming. It's taken us into a completely different domain. It's like tickling the entrance to the Sterkfontein Caves, you know.
Wow.
And then suddenly you go in and you see Naledi, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are different orders of magnitude. That's why some nights I can barely sleep.
It's a great thing, this. I think it's absolutely wonderful. All right, so Prof, are there any other major events that are going to happen in our skies in the next couple of months?
So the only real major event...
Because we've been spoilt this year.
We have, very much so. I would say, and I'd like to alert all your listeners to this, is that, and people are missing this, the one major... the driving factor in my mind is the sun, which is just writhing, seething, sending aurora to northern France. I mean, domains we've never, ever, ever...
Just by the way, how long do we still have with the sun before it starts to expand and take us in?
Ah, so there's no real cause for alarm. We can still grab a coffee. The sun is going through perhaps not quite midlife crisis, but the sun is around 4.5 million years old, and it has another, we're halfway. So the sun has a rather 4.5 million years to go. And I think left to the politicians, they'll do a good job of destroying everything.
Long before
long,
the sun.
long before 4.5 billion years is up.
Yeah.
But that's what's actually most exciting to me is, yes, you know, we've been so spoilt with the CMEs, with the total eclipse of the sun and so on. But that's why I'm, you know, focusing on the aurora.
We've got a question here from Ken who says, aren't these pics manipulated, as in people put colors into them because they're infrared, not as the naked eye would see them?
So the pictures that I showed you today and that we showed you are not infrared pictures. They're taken with... In fact, you know, Gareth, quite a number of your followers used mobile phone technology. They just held the mobile phone up. It is true, I have to say this, it is true that these mobile phones or sophisticated cameras like I might use, Nikons or Canons and so on, will show you details in the aurora, which you can't see easily with the naked eye. But, I mean, it's interesting. Some of my group members, one lady in particular, Roma, could only ever see white when she came with me. She saw the dancing curtains, but what? Colorblind, in a sense. So that can happen. And different eyes have got different sensitivities to colors. But the ones that you saw now dancing over France and Iceland and so on, those colors are real. Very little enhancing is required to actually see them. In fact, you see them, you can see them with the naked eye. That's the incredible thing about the aurora right now. And I think that's what's happening in the sky right now, which is just so exciting, is the sun really about to maybe eject more CMEs. And I'm really hoping that more will, you know, Norway.
Is it possible to, and I will suggest to people that they go and visit your website, davidblock.com. sun.co.za.
Yes.
And they can go and line themselves up for the next
trip. Absolutely.
But is it possible that the sun could eject such a large coronal mass that we might have our electronics knocked out by it?
Oh, that's a very, very interesting question. Now, apparently a lot of the satellites owned by Elon Musk, the electronics had to be switched right down and off.
Oh.
Because these particles can create havoc as far as electronic grids are concerned.
Well, they've got charge on them.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. So apparently a lot of the satellites belonging to his company had to be shut down until the CME, the dangers passed. And yes, I mean, in days gone by even, it can create havoc with radio systems, well, with communication systems. And the interesting thing with the CME, Gareth, is they are so unpredictable. We know the sun is increasing in activity, as I'm talking to you, but when there'll next be a CME, when
nobody
that
knows.
Happens, nobody knows.
Because the sun is unpredictable.
That's absolutely correct.
And any chance that we could have really terrible radiation that could affect us and give us all cancers or mutate us? Or?
That's again, very interesting. And the answer there, I believe, is no. Fortunately, we have two in our favor. We've got our atmosphere.
Right.
And then protecting us is the magnetosphere.
Right.
And so these particles don't just zap in onto the Earth, but they first have to follow the magnetic field lines of the Earth.
And those are generated at the poles.
And those come into the Earth at the poles.
And therefore, that's where you see the aurora.
Exactly true. It's only because of these gargantuan CMEs that we've been able to see them further north and further south. You see, Gareth, for example, at the Antarctic, there are no hotels at the Antarctic. So that's why you normally just don't see them unless you're resident at the Antarctic.
And the northern ones are called the Aurora Borealis,
that's
and the
correct.
Southern ones are Australis.
The Aurora Australis. But the intensity of the CMEs, the coronal mass ejections, was so high that you could start seeing the Aurora Australis from the domains of Southern Africa, which is really, in my lifetime, completely unheard of. And the Aurora Borealis, you could see from the UK. There were sightings in London. There were sightings throughout the USA. I mean, this was a celestial firework display of the absolute grandest of proportions.
Epic proportions.
Well,
epic.
I'm sorry it's taken us so long to get you in here, Prof, but you've got to see our new studio. And now
I love your studio.
And now
I
you've
think
seen,
it's just awesome.
You know that when you come, you can bring pictures. I would suggest you send them to me rather than James because he doesn't know what to do with them. And then we can always get them ready for you in time. But
thank
Professor
you.
David Block, it is always one of my favorite things to have
thank
you around.
You.
I'm just
pleasure.
so pleased
absolutely.
That you are here in South Africa to help all of us understand things that we see in the skies. And I wish you luck on your next adventures with all these people who are going with you on these tours. I'm sure they come back with their minds blown. Mm.
But the interesting thing is the moment they look up in awe and wonder, they say, but I originally heard, because we always follow Gareth Cliff and his show. And so you are far more famous, Gareth, in the Arctic Circle than you might realize.
Well, that's what I was always aiming for. That's all I wanted.
But I must congratulate you on an awesome studio at The Real Network.
Thank you.
It is going to work magic with future astronomy slides.
I'm delighted. And remember, as Prof Block always says, no matter what your age, you should always
look up.
There we go. That's us. 7 o'clock. We'll be back in just a moment or two.